I'm Tanzina Vega, and we're back with The Takeaway. Take a listen to this. It's a place you've probably never been to. Welcome to the Zabalo River in Ecuador's Amazon rainforest, one of the world's remaining truly quiet places. These are places that are largely free of human-made noise, whether that's the everyday hum of street traffic, the din of planes flying overhead, or the cacophony of nearby construction. And whether we realize it or not, humans have dramatically altered the soundscapes of environments around the world. So much so that truly quiet places, like the Ho Rainforest in Washington State's Olympic National Park, are almost like an endangered species. Matt Mickelson is an audio engineer and executive director of the Wilderness Quiet Parks program for Quiet Parks International. And that's just one of the organizations working to protect and preserve quiet places here in the U.S. and abroad.
Quiet can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. When we as an organization talk about natural silence or natural quiet, what we mean is the lack of human-made noise, any human-made noise. And that's incredibly difficult to find. I mean, there are so few places left, both in the United States and the world, where there is pure natural silence for more than, 15 minutes at a time. But also quiet is subjective, and we adapt to quiet. So if you spend your day in the subway and commuting that way, and then you go to a spot in Central Park, it can appear quiet, and it's also rejuvenative in the same kind of way. So it's really interesting listening to the world around you and asking yourself, what's quiet and what does quiet do for you?
As a New Yorker, and when we're not in a global pandemic, I often try to find quiet places in New York City. In fact, there's a book about 50 of the top quiet places in the city. But how many quiet places are actually left in this country? I mean, how hard is it, Matt, to find quiet?
It's so hard that you can devote your entire career to it and maybe even fail then. I'm really lucky to work with a large team of people all over the world who are devoted to this, but in particular, Gordon Hempton, who has been working in this field and trying to find quiet for decades now. And by his estimates, there are fewer than 10 places left in the United States that are truly quiet. And what that means is that they experience no noise pollution for an average of 15 minutes or more at a time.
You and the organization you work for, Quiet Parks International, makes me just want to sign up, frankly. I can't imagine two better things. A quiet park are working to identify and preserve some quiet places. How do you find those quiet places, Matt?
Road noise is a huge contribution to noise pollution, obviously. So first, I try and find a place that's a few miles away from roads, which at first thought might seem easy, but it's very difficult to find any, even wilderness area or national park area, that isn't close to a road. And then I start looking at air traffic patterns and where the commercial jets are flying and what the habit of private jets are as well. And then I look at like other resource extraction activities kind of in the area. So sometimes you have these massive swaths of private ranch lands, but there's oil extraction or a mining operation. And then once you kind of find all those, the only thing to do is to get out there. And often getting to these places is an expedition level effort. You have to pack for days of being off grid and not having cell service. And then we have to take care of all of our equipment and bring that with us. And sometimes I spend weeks gearing up to get to a place, and I get there and I step out of the car and immediately know it's not going to work. But other times it does. And it's really so magical either way to kind of be on that hunt.
I'm curious about why quiet is so important. I mean, why do people go seeking quiet?
Quiet is good for us mentally, physically. It actually does things to our brain and to our body that is healthy when we experience quiet. It lowers our stress hormones. It allows us to interpret information better. And as humans, like, we've evolved to try and gather as much information as possible. And quiet allows us to interpret and to gather that information in the most meaningful way possible. The other reason why quiet is so important from kind of a conservation standpoint or from an ecological standpoint is that soundscape is an amazing overall indicator of how healthy an environment is. So if you listen to, some of the places I've been, like outside of Houston, where there's a lot of oil refineries and chemical plants, there's this loud din that's happening, kind of all around you. And then what we see when we test the water and the air quality is that it reflects the soundscape. Whereas if you go to a place like the Ho Rainforest, that's a place that experiences very little noise pollution and is also such a healthy and intact ecosystem. So we can use soundscapes from a conservation standpoint to help us make decisions about how to conserve an area.
Is too much human-produced noise harmful?
Absolutely. And people much smarter than myself have been working to kind of study the effects of noise pollution on humans for a long time now. And the science is really clear. Noise pollution is bad for us. And, people who experience high levels of noise have higher levels of stress hormone, higher chances of developing hypertension and cardiac problems. And then when we look at like children, there's some really interesting studies that have come out about noise pollution and how it affects children and how it impacts their ability to read and write, how it impacts their ability to make meaningful relationships. While noise has been one of the kind of undercover sources of pollution, because it's not as in your face as maybe, you know, oil running through a river or foggy, hazy air from cars and pollution, it's really equally as important and it can help us address all those issues.
I'm thinking about a program called the Fresh Air Fund, which is meant to take low-income children out of urban environments and take them to summer camps that are usually in the woods. How much of this access to quiet places also has to do with income and our social stratifications that we often see? Like, are poor brown and black kids, for example, less likely to have places where they can find quiet?
Oh my God, yes. You know, race, income, socioeconomic status plays such a huge role just in access to nature in general. You know, even forgetting about quiet for a moment, we see in outdoor recreation and outdoor education, people and families who have access to those programs are classically middle to upper income white folks. And I think the whole industry, both in conservation and outdoor education and recreation, we're all trying to figure out right now how to change this. And I think there's been some great movement over the past few years and the past few months. And we as an organization obviously recognize this. Like I said previously, like our hope is that we can tell you no matter where you live, where the quietest place is in your neighborhood or a subway stop away for you to be able to access quiet, because it shouldn't be a resource that only people with privilege can enjoy.
Once the coronavirus hit, everything, even in New York City, was shut down. I don't think any of us had seen a city look like this. And I'm just wondering, what effect did the coronavirus in its early months in particular have on the soundscape?
It was really so interesting to witness, even for myself. Like, I live in the least population-dense state in the mainland United States and frequently get to experience quiet. But I recognized, like, pretty immediately when the country mostly went into lockdown, the lack of air traffic was so, so apparent. You know, where I'd usually go out for a little hike and hear two or three planes fly over, I heard nothing. And that kind of got me thinking, like, oh, well, I wonder, you know, in the big cities, what does it sound like? So I kind of pinged all my sound recording colleagues and friends from around the world and said, hey, what's happening in your cities? What does it sound like? And I ended up curating this kind of like installation of sounds from all over the world, and such incredible examples of this hush that kind of came over us and this real opportunity to listen. Like, I had a colleague who sent me recordings from Terminal A at LAX Airport, just kind of on the drop-off area there. And not only could you barely hear any cars passing by, but there were no planes taking off or landing at LAX for, you know, like 5 or 10 minutes. A really interesting listening opportunity for all of us during this pandemic is just the decreased amount of activity and transportation, but also kind of asking ourselves what sound means. You know, now when I hear ambulance sirens or police sirens, my mind goes to a different place than maybe it did before. And it's interesting to examine how sound, you know, psychologically informs our behavior and our feelings.
Are there any places in the United States that are especially, and I'm asking this as a New Yorker, that are vulnerable to noise pollution. I'm gonna raise our hand here and say we in particular, but any other places?
Cities in general, you know, experience high levels of noise pollution. Population dense areas, you know, you're subjected to more noise on a daily basis, and honestly, like unhealthy levels of noise, as the World Health Organization would label it. But I would say that even the effort of trying to get out and find a quiet place, whether it be in your local park or maybe a little north of the city, or if you're lucky enough to be able to, you know, plan a weekend trip somewhere out of the city, just the act of trying to find quiet and engaging your senses and your ears and really deeply listening, I think is so beneficial. And not just because it's relaxing, but I find it like it allows me to have better interpersonal relationships and allows me to form opinions better just by actively listening. And I think we could all do a lot more listening and a lot less talking, especially right now at such a crucial point in our country's history. We have a lot of work to do and it's very overwhelming. And personally, like I find the first step of listening a great first step.
Matt Mickelson is an audio engineer and the executive director of the Wilderness Quiet Parks Program for Quiet Parks International. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Is there a special place that you like to visit to escape everything? It doesn't have to be quiet. You can tell us about it at 877-869-8253. That's 877-8-MY-TAKE. Or you can record it for us and send it to takeawaydigital@gmail.com. Here's some sound from our producer, Meg Dalton. It's Mill River Park in Stamford, Connecticut. Thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed the program today. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.